Today on the Rising Coaches Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Rising Coaches Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Bender, and today's episode is brought to you in part by Boost Analytics. Boost is a one-of-a-kind technology company that provides NBA caliber analytics and video analysis to select number of men's and women's Division I basketball programs. Boost uses artificial intelligence and natural language technologies to make analytics more user-friendly and to translate complex data into easy-to-read college insights. The Boost platform was built by data scientists and basketball experts with decades of experience at both the collegiate and NBA levels. To learn more about Boost and how your team can gain a competitive edge, head on over to their website at www.boostsport.ai and join the fastest growing team in college basketball analytics. Also, if you're not already a member and are interested in joining the largest coaching tree in basketball, visit risingcoaches.com to sign up today. You'll build genuine relationships with other coaches, have access to amazing content that will allow you to develop your craft, expand your network, and see job opportunities on our member site that don't get posted anywhere else. For more information, visit risingcoaches.com. All right, today's special guest, Riley Hernandez, head coach at Seward County Community College. How are you doing tonight, Coach?
I'm doing well, Coach Bender. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no problem. Excited to visit with you here over the next hour. And, you know, tell us a little bit about your coaching journey, how you got to where you are, and, you know, how you got to Seward County.
Yeah, currently the head men's basketball coach here at Seward County Community College. I took the program over back in June this previous year. Before that, I was at Williston State College, Division I junior college in Williston, North Dakota, the oil patch up there. I actually came straight out of college to Williston State. Eric Peterson, his last head coaching job, just recently got the head coaching position at University of South Dakota. He took me on, a guy he went to college with and has known for a long time, had coached me at Lakeland College, now Lakeland University, Aaron Onenson. And I went there to coach. I knew I wanted to get into college coaching. I knew I didn't want to deal with or be in the high school ranks. College seemed like my calling. It seemed like where I wanted to be. When I had the opportunity to find a home to continue to compete, I competed at Vermillion Community College for Paul McDonald. He told me, hey, what are you trying to do? Or where are you trying to go? What are you looking for? I knew I wanted to get into college coaching. And he said, well, then your next move and your next decision has to be based on that. And he said it pretty matter of fact and was pretty quick whipped, as if I should have already known that information. But the way he said it made sense to me. And so when I was looking for a next, my conversations went there and sat down with Aaron Onenson. And he was about, hate to throw his age out there right now, but about 28 at the time. He's got a little bit more gray hair now, but he sat me down and we talked about some things, and he thought we'd maybe have conversation about playing time and some different stuff. And my conversation with him was about my next. I asked him, hey, you know, I'd like to be you. He asked, and he had asked me what I'm looking to do with my life. And I let him know that. I said, I want to be you. He was the youngest NCAA head coach at one point in time. And I saw that, and I saw myself in him. I felt like I could do that. I felt like that was my calling, and that was what I was looking to do. And he said, hey, you got 2 years of an interview. You're going to be here. You're going to compete. You're going to lead. I'll let you in. I'll open the doors. We can talk strategy. We can talk scouting, recruiting. We can go down the whole line. And if you take care of your business here and do well, then I'll call anybody and everybody. He was transparent in that, you know, he wasn't connected to everybody, but he was going to be willing to do that if I was the person I believe myself to be, and the person that he had kind of vetted through in learning about me as a player and as a person. And from then on, I knew this is what I wanted to do. And unfortunately, at Lakeland University, I could not get the GA position. I thought that's what I wanted to do, stay there. I'm two things. I'm really stubborn and I'm loyal. And so I wanted to hold it down. And it was kind of in between. So the former point guard, my junior year, was in that position and that role. So I couldn't get it. Which meant I had to branch out. Really thankful that that happened. Coach Ani found some opportunities for me, one at the NAIA realm or level, and one as a GA at an NCAA Division II, and then one at the JUCO level. He had kind of asked me what I was looking at, and he had known some of my frustrations at the NCAA Division III level. You can't work out with your staff. You can't work out with your coaches all year round and have pockets where you can get touches on the floor. And I saw the staff there as great mentors to me and great people, and I wanted to spend a lot of time with them. Unfortunately, my time was really only able to be spent in the office, and I really communicated that with him often. I wanted to be on the floor. Let's talk the game. Let's move through it. Let's work out, and let's do that out of season. And we just can't at that level. And because of that, Ani had really pushed me to look at some different levels and some different things, and had asked me what I liked about junior college. And I really enjoyed that you could be really hands-on there and that you can learn a lot. And so when I got the opportunity to take an assistant position as the women's assistant coach, and then volunteer on the men's side, I felt like that made sense to me. I didn't realize what I was biting off. I was doing scout for the women's team, and we were teaching a little bit more up the line, on the line, and then you turn around and get done with a back-to-back game, and then you're gapped up. And so you're communicating different strategies, philosophies, night in, night out. And the first couple nights you felt really crisp. And then as it went and started to move, everything started to jumble together. You're putting a lot of time, energy, effort in, and everything kind of started to mesh together. And I remember I was sitting down and saw something, and I have no idea what I saw, but I was really pressed for Trey Burnett to get up and get up the line on the line. And so I'm yelling at him to get up. We just gone into a 4 overtime game with the women, and it didn't go the way we wanted it to go. And I'm yelling at him about those principles and backdoor layup. And Coach Peterson just turned, looked at me, gave me a long look like, what are you talking about? What is wrong with you? What are you doing? That's not what we do. And I had to kind of reflect on that and realize like, hey, I might have bit off more than I could chew here. I'm doing a lot of stuff. That's the beauty of junior college. But that first year I was really kind of baptized in. You can do as much or as little as you want at the junior college level. It's really there for you to take. And as a young assistant trying to jump in the game, I'd probably taken a little bit too much on my plate, but did so with a lot of enthusiasm and a lot of and excitement. And I did learn a lot there through just a lot of what not to do. And again, being able to have that experience was unique and great. And I thought that's what was great about junior colleges. I had that experience. And then to move on, I ended up trying to get a position at Williston State because Eric Peterson moved on as the assistant. I tried to stay at Williston State. And initially I thought I was going to walk in and be the head men's basketball coach there. And so I had a conversation with Terry Olson, a Hall of Fame coach there, names on the floor, a legend, a living legend. Went in to go talk to him about how at 22 I was going to lead the team and I was going to continue to push excellence here at Williston State. And he politely smirked and chuckled at me and said, I need to find a GA job or I need to get in the high school ranks and kind of get it figured out. And that he wasn't going to push anybody to keep me or anybody else around that was helping with Eric. And I'm stubborn. So I hung around and got to know Corey Faringer. And he told me the same thing, go get another job. Coach Corey Faringer had come over from Dakota College Botno and had seen his passion, his enthusiasm, his work ethic, his demeanor on the sideline, and how connected his team was and the culture of his team at Dakota College Botno. And I wanted to be a part of that. I wanted to learn from him. And he really didn't want me to learn from him for a couple months. But I wouldn't go anywhere. I kept calling him. I'd figure out where he was on the road. I'd try to book him a hotel or I'd send him deals for a hotel. I'd get him contacts in the places that he was at, people to talk to, players to find and to look at the places he was going. And the whole way he just kept saying, don't forget to find another job. Don't forget to find another job. And he spent a lot of time on the road. And when he came back, I was in office. And he just called me into his first to ask me what the heck I was doing because our athletics coordinator assumed I was still coaching with him because I kept showing up to the office and, just kept grinding and kept going. And Eventually kind of we sat down over that week and he offered me the position and got to stay and learn a lot from him. From there, he took the Western Nebraska position. And at 25, I was pulled in by Terry Olson and our athletic director, Dan Artemenko, at the time, and the president, and asked to be the head men's basketball coach at 25. And instead of me asking them, they were asking me, and it was a great feeling and an exciting thing. And it's really changed my life. And now we've spent a good amount of time there and move forward here after five seasons at Williston State as the head coach, jumped into a new experience here at Seward County.
That's awesome. Quite the unique journey. And, you know, I love your stubbornness and, you know, loyalty obviously is an important quality to have, not only in life, but in coaching. But, you know, when you're stubborn to a point of where you're almost naive to the profession, but absolutely. It's also awesome that at such a young age, you were able to, you know, get head coaching experience, even coaching experience at 22. And that was something that when I was a manager, a GA, and then a video coordinator, I kept interviewing at different places. And they're like, well, you haven't coached yet. And here I am, 8 years of Division I high major experience. And it was like, you haven't coached, you haven't recruited, you haven't coached, you haven't recruited. And so the quicker you can find reps on the court, find reps in recruiting, that's, you know, the magical part of, you know, lower level basketball or not Division I, Division II, you can do it. NAI, you can do it. You know, junior college, you can do it. And I think that's a great way for young coaches to get their feet wet. And you can make those mistakes like you talked about. Learn, you know, like learn your stubbornness, learn who you are and make those mistakes there where now as you get older, where it matters maybe a little bit more, you won't make those same mistakes in building your culture and doing those types of things. So head coach at 25, you try to get it at 22, but head coach at 25. And then, you know, here you are. You got the Seward County job last year. You just finished up your first season. Talk a little bit about like the interview process for you to get a job at a young age. And obviously winning helps and you did a really good job at Williston. But, you know, how have you, you know, navigated that space of, you know, getting that next job?
Absolutely. I think, again, you're going to kind of fail with your first thought. I think as a head coach, if you're going to think more defensive minded, I think you can be successful. And I think as a coach in general. And by that, I just mean, you know, failing with your first thought, you know, you're going to be early, do your work early and trust the people around you. And you got to give people the opportunity to trust them. And so going through a lot of different processes as a head coach, I kind of leaned on those things and would lean in those spaces. And when it came time to try to figure out if we were going to move on and move forward, we had to kind of know what that looked like and what it was and why we would leave. And for me at that time at Williston State, I was the head softball coach. I was also the head basketball coach. And I had an abundance of institutional knowledge that I had accumulated over my time there. And I kind of started to be a little bit like the grumpy old man. I knew how the volleyball scoreboard and score clock worked. And how it needed to work and what fuses we needed to switch on and off at what times, all the kind of the quirks around the facility and getting ready in game ops and those things, eligibility. I'd been around and I'd really stuck my nose in everything that I could learn about the whole process and everything about the student and how to get them from A to B. And then also how to provide an experience. I learned a lot of that from Eric Peterson, and he was the AD and men's basketball coach. And at one point was also the person that started up softball there. And so I'd learned from him, and it kind of put me in a spot where I had to figure out what it was for me, you know, and I needed to kind of figure out how I could be a better member of my family. And so this opportunity and looking for it, I had to establish or find a place that I felt like was similar. Because I felt like the brand and the culture that we created at Williston State fit me. You've got to go to a place where you're willing to sacrifice. I grew up in St. Paul, Minnesota. You got to put those amenities down. You got to put some of these things away, set them to the side, and focus on your school, focus on your ability to be a basketball player, and then focus on yourself as a man. And so when it came time to start figuring out my next, I looked at Seward County and I really thought it was similar to Williston State in that It's a landlocked island. People look at it and say, you live in Liberal, you know, how do you live in the middle of nowhere? And I had already lived that life. And I enjoyed that. I understood that there's a true community when you can't run to a major city. You've got to be a part of your community. And when I identified and started kind of going through Seward County when the job opened and was posted, I realized that there was a lot of similarities there. And you have to be a part of your community. You have to get to know the people around you. You can't move in and move out. You really can't leave for a weekend unless you really make time to plan for it. So for me, I thought that fit my personality, also fit the type of people we wanted to bring in, people that were really ready to slow their lives down a little bit and really maximize their focus on what they're trying to do so that they can grow as rapidly as possible. So I first identified Seward County and I felt like it fit me. And then I had to figure out how I could communicate that to the people that were making that decision in that interview process. And, you know, I thought I personally needed to lean on those experiences that I had at Williston State and be able to communicate the things that I was a part of. And then also my vision and what we were looking for. And, you know, I think for us that it came down to communicating who we were, what our values are, and that we are willing to dive in and be all in, be members of the community. You know, we purchased a home. We had purchased a home in Williston. We purchased a home here. We want to be here and we want to figure it out. We aren't looking for perfect, but we are looking to try to identify all areas that maybe need help or growth in our campus so we can be a part of the positive change. And so going through a lot of conversation in the interview process, I think I was also having that conversation in dialect when it came time, was asking some questions that allowed for open conversation and more or less the five people on the panel and myself having some open dialogue about, you know, what the surrounding area is or isn't, and why it's such a great thing that there's not a lot around and that you are a member of your community and what to look for when you get here. And like I said, I really wanted them to know that I'm willing to be here and not just be here in a flash in the pan, but be here and make and establish something sustainable. And that includes bringing in student athletes that, you know, are going to be great in the classroom, great in the community, and great on the court. And we really wanted to get that known and understood that we want to be a part of the community and not necessarily be individuals in a program that pulls and leeches from the community, but one that helps grow it. And I think that allowed me to open up some doors and invited me in on the conversation. You know, I do think that was important for what Seward County was looking for. And it also was what I was looking for. So I think it made for a good match. And the willingness to kind of look at everything and say, hey, yeah, that's not the shiniest quarter, or maybe this is a little rusty over here, but let's figure it out. Let's work through that, as opposed to really, if something showed up inside the interview process that maybe was perceived negative, really circling that and trying to vet through that. I, you know, a lot of our conversations, if something came up that was a negative, maybe the updated, how updated or not updated the dorms are. You know, the communication was, okay, well, what are we doing moving forward? What does our growth look like here at Seward County to earn another building to, you know, remodel the building? What are we looking to do here at Seward County? Or is this just what we have and what we're looking at? And I think there is a place here that's looking to grow. And so as those conversations started and were happening, I think it kind of was natural for both parties to be curious about one another. And I think it kind of flowed naturally through the steps in the interview process.
Yeah, that's very unique. Like you said, a couple of things I think are really important to kind of reiterate, but you solve problems, you don't create them. And, you know, just listening to you speak right now is like, hey, don't look at the things as a bad thing. Like, hey, this is a challenge or this is not good. How do we make it better? Like, hey, how do we get these results that we're trying to do? Another thing, you know, you kind of targeted that job but that's like the only job that you went all in, like you focused on one thing and you went all in on that one position to try and get that and how you're going to fit and what you're going to do. And, you know, it worked out in your favor. You know, having some conversation with you in the past, you when you move your family, you said, you know, you want to be involved in the community, you want to buy a house, you want to be in that area, you want to do those types of things. What is it that, you know, it's a coaching carousel time right now. A lot of people are getting jobs, they're moving their families, they got nowhere to live. You know, they don't know where they're going. They're leaving kids behind, wives behind, you know, and you said to me the other day, you know, hey, go get the house situated. And then I went and recruited and I disappeared for 3 months. Like, Dave, give us some man, husband coaching advice of like, hey, I got a new job. You know, what else do you have to think about besides like the obvious stuff that, hey, we may be missing as dumb males sometimes?
Yeah, I just think it, you don't know what you don't know. We didn't know what it was like to be a head coach until you were in it. I think you have a lot of people communicate that to you, and as an assistant coach, you nod your head and say, yes, I understand that I don't know what it's like to be a head coach. But then you move into that position, and it's like you're driving a Ferrari down the Autobahn, and you've only got three fingers and one hand and one eye that works, but it blinks. And you're starting to understand a little bit more what everybody's talking about. Everything's moving way too dang fast and you can't keep up. I think it's the same thing when it comes to moving your family. A lot of the conversation you're trying to have with people that have done it often, once you say yes, and you're trying to pull as much information as you can from those people and their experiences to then put that experience that they had into your realm, and how does it fit what you're going through exactly? And you're just trying to go through that because you've never been through the door. You've never moved your family yet. And, you know, we learned a lot through failure. I would like to say I've got great advice on what to do, but I think a lot more on what not to do. You know, my communication with my wife was that I really wanted her to have an experience in the summer that could be unlike any other. She and I are very close to our families. Family is very important to both of us. And so for her ability, for my wife to go spend time with her family in northern Minnesota in one of the most beautiful places in the country in June and July was important. And I really wanted her to do that and really pushed her to go do that and said, hey, you know, when it comes time, you'll be down here. We'll find a position and, you know, we'll figure it out with you and your position. But I really want you to do this so that you can have a level of joy that's unique in this summer that you might not ever get. But also, I knew the task I had at hand and that I knew I wasn't going to be very present. And so when that came, I figured, hey, yeah, I'm going to get this house ready. And then you start to try to put the knives away and you don't know which drawer the knives are actually supposed to go in. But you put them away and you thought they're in the right spot. Same thing with the pots and the pans. And you thought you put things away where they made sense. And then my wife got home and she was trying to find things in the kitchen and couldn't find anything. And that's when I realized, okay, I might have unpacked the boxes, but I didn't really put this home in place the way that one, my wife would like to. And then two, it's also her home and it's a joint thing. And I think I thought separating the two, and if I did a lot of the heavy lifting that would just be great. And I think as it got moving, I realized, you know, that life's better together. It's better shared. And I was in a very big house, a 4-bedroom, 2-bathroom home that we just purchased by myself for a pretty extensive amount of time. And yeah, I was laying on the ground because that made sense to me. I was waiting for my wife to get back and, you know, like the week before and set up, you know, the bed frame, but I was on the ground just like I was when I was an assistant, you know, on an air mattress my first year. And I was, you know, moving and shaking and getting up and going and getting up and going and, you know, calling as many people as I could and communicating with as many people as I could and being in front of as many people as I could. But with that, I wasn't doing that with my wife. And I think as I move through it and I learned through my first move with my family, my wife and my daughter, it might be a little bit slower you might not be able to build your culture as fast as you want or would like and build your team as fast as you want or you'd like, but you can't forget about your team. You can't forget about your main team. And I think I kind of, what I did was I subbed them out and I subbed them for about 2 months. And I said, hey, you guys are over here, you know, we'll FaceTime here and there. And like, I'm going to get this done and we're going to divide and conquer. And really what I think more or less happened is I subbed them out. And I think if I could do it again, it might be a little slower and a little choppier. But that in the transformational process of putting your team together and your culture together, but you don't want to sacrifice your family and your team, your main team for the 21-22 season at Seward County Community College, because that's fleeting. And at the end of it, one person's going to cut down the last net. And this year it was Coach Heyer. And that was an amazing experience that he went through and had. But, you know, for me moving through, not knowing what I didn't know about moving, you know, I think I'd probably move more together than trying to, like I said, sub her and my daughter out of the day-to-day process and be more inclusive.
Yeah, it's good stuff to note and, you know, think about. And we, you know, put our blinders on and we think everything's about basketball and we get caught, you know, we forget, you know, like you said, hey, who's our main team? You know, the people that are there with you every single day. And, you know, you got to take care of your family first. You've said throughout this, you know, first 25 minutes, a lot about the word culture and all these press conferences is coming up. And, you know, it's kind of a buzzword. It's overused. People, they just say it to say it. But I feel like you may be a little bit different than most. And so talk a little bit about your experiences with that word and what it actually, you know, instead of just a buzzword, how do you live it? How do you make it, you know, transformative? Like you said, how do you make it, you know, tangible? What do you do that's different than most and you feel is more unique?
Yeah, I don't know if I feel it. That it's more unique. I just think it's probably just true to myself. I think as I moved and I was trying to figure out what I was going to do with my life, there was a lot of people that came into my life and were willing to square me up and tell me the truth about me and then allow me to take that information in and then apply it to myself to be a better person and then move forward. If what we're really looking to do here is to try to transform as many lives as we can and to make as many people as employable as possible, then we're going to have to stick to what we said we were going to stick to. And it, as you go throughout your year, there's going to be constant tests where your student athletes and your community might look to kind of goat you a different way. And you've got to constantly kind of step back and say, okay, if it's September 1, if it's August 1, how would I conduct myself in this situation? Or am I moving in a space that's more circumstantial and it's more short-term and short-sighted? And also, what are the domino effects of that if I make that decision on this person's life or lives? So when we get going, we've got to be able to stop, slow ourselves down, and really dissect what decision we're making as a head coach. Everything is going to start top down. You've got to be that beacon and you've got to be extremely stubborn. We do a lot of stuff with echo and response. We do things as a team, as a group that put people outside of their comfort zone. And we do it often. We'll sit down, we'll have calibrating conversations where as student athletes and as coaches and as a staff, we're able to speak our minds, speak freely and be honest with one another and hold everybody accountable. That's not really comfortable as the head coach. You've got to put yourself in an uncomfortable space. But if we ask our student athletes to do that every day, then we've got to be willing to do that to ourselves. So sometimes that means you might lose a basketball game. And as a head coach, you never want to put yourself in a situation that you might lose, or you might have a little bit better chance at losing a game. But if you're going to step back and keep the main thing, August 1, you're not competing. So where you are in the classroom or how you're moving academically, if it's important then, it's also important November 27th when that instructor communicates with you that a student athlete's fallen short. And so I think it's something that can kind of, like I said, can kind of maybe be seen as harmful at times, especially in the win-loss column. But early, especially is trying to establish culture and set something and move something forward. When these things come up, you've got to make sure that you're holding firm to who you are. Because not only this group of student athletes that you have, but the next group of student athletes that you have are going to communicate about you and who you really are. And you want to really be the best person for them and be their best conscience. We want to hold them to the standard that they asked us to hold them to. And so we just want to be that mirror. But every once in a while, you don't want to see what's in that mirror. And when it comes onto the head coach's plate, you have the option to maybe smudge it a little bit if you want to, and you have to move away from that. And sometimes the best decision might be for an individual that might not be the best for the team. And you've got to weigh through who else is being impacted, and you've got to make sure that you're doing it in a calculated way that is best for everybody and also best for that person that's being affected. Because if we move away, our actions are everything. So if we move in one way, then we need to be able to make sure that way is the whole way, and that we communicate almost like a mime. It shouldn't be what we're saying, but it should be how we're acting. And we expect the same out of our guys. We're able to have that conversation out of our team and our student athletes about, you know, not what you're saying in the office or what you're saying in the locker room, but how are you acting and how does that marry with who you want to be and where you want to go? Again, I think being really stubborn to it, you know, being stubborn, being loyal. I think as a head men's basketball coach, especially in the community college realm, you need to have the support of the people that you are directly reporting to, who's athletic director for myself, and then also the people that your direct report reports to, the president, and then stakeholders. We've got to have a good understanding of who is invested into our team and our program, and if they're willing to move in a place of a standard and a culture that you also want to move in. And if those people aren't willing to do that, then you might be in the wrong place and position. And for me, I had to kind of vet through that process and communicate that out in the interview process to make it known who we were, who we were going to be, and also who we're striving not to be.
That's really powerful stuff. And I think, you know, asking those right questions, like you said, you know, figuring out who's actions, you know, actually align with what they're doing and what they're saying, who you want to be and who you want to be known as, because a lot of us talk about it, but we don't always act it. And the same thing, you know, with your players or the people that are around it, you know, it's easy to say something, you know, it's harder to do it. And I think that if you live that model every single day, you know, you, like you said, you know, whether it's August 1st, September 1st, or you're, you know, March 1st, and you're playing for a championship, like, hey, all that stuff, you know, you got to treat all those days like that's part of the culture, and every day is like a game day type scenario and situation. You talked about some of the culture stuff, and I think it is really powerful. And you talked a lot about the program, the people around the program, and your players. What about your staff? How do you kind of go about building a staff? And you've always been kind of understaffed. And so how has, you know, growing and learning, because I've always had a big staff. I've always had three assistants and kind of finagled our way to find a way to do so. And, you know, but I've also had a lot of assistants leave. So every year I've had to retrain, you know, one or two guys. And so it's always a challenge. But, you know, how have you done it with being understaffed? How have you not used that as an excuse? And then you kept the guy when you got there, correct, at Seward?
Yeah, absolutely.
Tell us about why you would do something like that, or why, yeah, how that worked out.
Yeah, exactly. You know, when it all kind of boiled down and started to move, Coach Tyrone Grady was actually also one of those guys that was a finalist for the position here. And he had gone through the interview process and fell short of what he had set out to do, and that was to be the next head men's basketball coach at Seward County Community College. For me, I looked at him in a way that I'd seen my 22-year-old self, that, yeah, I didn't apply for the same job that Coach Corey Faringer applied to, but I went in to have the conversation with the person that I felt like was going to make the decision. So for me, I felt like I had had that conversation and that I was told no, and that I also wanted to stay. I wanted to be a part of something because I felt like it was there. I felt like the community, I felt like the way in which the culture was already established, I felt like there was such a good thing going at Williston State, and I really wanted to stay a part of it. And when it came time to put a staff together, one thing that I've told, and I told Coach Grady jokingly, but I mean it, had he not applied for the position, I don't think I would have ever looked at him as an assistant coach. I want people to my left and right that I'm trying to keep up with. I want people daily that are challenging me to be cleaner, crisper, better, and not only as a coach, but as a man. And I had an hour and a half long conversation with Coach Tyrone Grady, and I wanted to know where his heart was. I wanted to know what he valued most about being a men's basketball coach. And his conversation geared towards people, and his conversation geared towards young people, his conversation geared towards mentorship, guidance, growth, not knowing anything about me, really. And the few things that I did know about him was that he was very down to earth, intentional. My brother was here as the SID at Seward County, is still here. I had had a conversation with my brother and said, hey, you know, is this the guy that you would say would come by and see you when, you know, you were doing 19-hour days, when you had all these, you know, all these things going on? Was he the guy come by, see you, say, hey, do you need a coffee? How are you? Are you all right? Hey, I see what you're doing. He's like, yeah, that's Coach Grady. That's Coach Grady. That's the guy. Like, he's been amazing to me. There's been some days that have been rough on me, but he's, you know, he can see that. And then he kind of comes over and just, you know, just a simple hello and a simple like, hey, I see that content you put out. That's great stuff. And for me, he had no idea I think he had some type of understanding that the SID's brother coached basketball, but not necessarily who I was or where I was, and that, oh, I want to get to know this SID's brother because I want to work for him. But those interactions were genuine, and those interactions, I think, were, for me, a gateway into who he was as a man. And for us, I think this program can be taken advantage of by people that are more transactional, just by how we approach it. So I was really worried about that. And then getting to know him and getting to know who he was through our conversation, and then also conversations that I had about how he acted and how did he act in this space or that space, it gave me great insight to who he was as a man. And those are the type of people that I want to be around. He's able to have conversation with me and say, Coach Riley, I'm going to have a conversation with you as Riley. Let's have a conversation as a man here. And Coach, as a man, this is what I see, and this is who we are trying to be. What are we doing today? And those conversations are way more exciting to me, and I feel like are pushing me in more of a positive direction than anything about how we defend a ball screen or how we close out or how we come off of a ball screen. And he's willing to have those, and he's also excited to have those conversations. But his actions and those actions that he had that he thought nobody was looking or was around or would even document, those were the things that drew me to him. And as we continued down the path, he and I both had a conversation about who else we would want to have around us, and hired Carlos Taylor, who was in charge of player development at the University of Montana State in Bozeman. guy that's passionate and also leading with his heart. And as we moved in conversation, he wanted to try to figure out what was best for him and what was best for his family and his next. And we gave him as much time as he needed to get that figured out. And when he decided that it was Seward County, he was all in. And he's moving with the same intention. I think one thing that we've got, again, from top to bottom, is guys with great hearts. The last one that we hired was Cole Edwards. I was an assistant when he was a player. And watching the road that he went through to be able to get on the floor and start at the Fiesta Bowl down in Mesa versus South Plains and snow and do some things, and a guy that was largely a walk-on. His just grittiness, determination, his fight was amazing to me, but also who he was as a quiet connector. I'm pretty vocal. He's very, very, very good at quietly connecting and quietly connecting one-to-one. And knowing who he was, he didn't know he was on an interview with me for those years that he was with me as a player, but I was able to watch his actions and I knew his heart and I knew who he was and I knew his passion. So it made for some very some easy decisions as a head men's basketball coach to hire and find, because I had already had some prior knowledge to who some of these people were through their heart and their intentions. And for me, it's made it a blast. It's been a whole lot of fun. Even when we moved with trying to find volunteer assistant coaches at Williston State, we were very guarded with that too. And Coach Kenley Nebaker is way smarter than you or I. He's the director of Train ND, and he's doing some really, really, really unique things with all types of technology I know nothing about. Beyond line of sight, all types of goofy stuff, stuff's flying around, drones. He's leading and innovating the world and the nation in something, and also has this great passion for basketball, but he's got a great heart. And he was the last assistant, volunteer assistant I'd had before coming down here, and he made that experience so enjoyable. And it made it obvious as who I wanted to be around me, and also to challenge me on the floor, off the floor, as a man, as a father, as a husband. And I believe the people around me do that. And it makes for an exciting time. I think our year on the floor wasn't what we wanted it to be, but our strength of staff was really unique and really fun. It was a great level of joy to work with those three guys on a day-to-day basis. We had our team kind of blown up. We had lost a lot of guys in the start of January, and we had to figure out who we were and what we were going to be. And you find out a lot about people when they step out, and you know, they didn't step out to fight to get in the region tournament. They stepped out to cut down the last net, and we were fighting to keep our locker room together and keep our culture together. And there's a level of humility that has to go into that, because you have to change how you play, you have to change how you move, and you've got to dive in deeper with your team to let them know that we're not going anywhere. We're gonna see this thing out. And we did that. Our guys, when we lost our last game at Coffeyville, felt like we just ran out of time, not that we ran out of care. And that was exciting to be in that locker room at the end of that year, for those guys to feel that way, and to grow the relationships that we grew, and also for our staff to show us who they were. They could have quit. They could have stepped away. They could have decided that they were just going to get on the road, recruit, never be in the locker room, never be in on the floor, never try to grind your gears up at night to figure out how to play, you know, and compete against some of the best teams in the country with a depleted roster. And with guys playing out of position and guys playing in positions that we never expected them to even be on the floor at times. So it made for a unique experience, but it also allowed us to see who our staff was in a very, very, very ugly situation. We all step out on the floor to coach. We step out to cut down the last net, not fight to be one place out of last.
Yeah, makes sense. You know, that's really powerful stuff. And, you know, I think it's very mature of you and confidence in yourself of knowing like, hey, this is who I am. And even though I don't know this person very well, or I know some people that may know him, that, hey, he aligns with how I am. You know, he's a guy that, you know, I have a big heart and I give my heart every day and it's not being reciprocated at times. Like, you know, that's a very hard thing to deal with as a coach. And I think that's a struggle that we have. And, you know, especially at this level. And one thing that I want to ask you, you know, you being kind of a JUCO person, and, you know, I've spent 6 years in JUCO, and, you know, at this level is not technically the point. The point is to get them to where they want to be. And at times you said something about, you know, transactional versus transformational. So how do you keep that the main thing, you know, because, you know, a lot of these players want to use it of just saying like, hey, I need to play in order to go, or I need to, you know, put up stats to go coach. Like, how do you keep that selfishness and that, hey, I just want to use it to go back D1 or go to a 4-year school or get a better scholarship? They don't really want to. So how do you incorporate that in your teachings?
Yeah, I think it becomes a lot of experience and trying to give the experiences that were already had growing up. Being Mexican American, you sit around and you hear stories. Sit down with the Latino crew at the crib. The conversations are all about stories, past stories, things that have happened in the past, and you learn a lot through those. And so the way I was taught was through a lot of story time, storytelling, and so we sit down and we tell the tales. The tough and frustrating part about it is that, yes, we do have people that don't get to where they want to go. And so we have to show that. We have to show what steps and what actions were taken to get to not playing basketball after junior college. What happened from A to B to get there? And what steps were made? What decisions did that person make that got them to that point? Did they not take numerous calls from NCAA Division II and NAI institutions that were over the moon about who they were as a person and as a player, and what happened to them, and how did they become the person out of action? And then also, how did that person get out of that situation? And so then we tell the tale of part two of that individual and how that individual overcame. Cita Conte's at Coppin State. And Cita Conte sat for a year. Cita Conte went into the transfer portal with a false sense of belief and hope and had to own that. And then he fought daily to try to get back into a realm and at a level that he believed he was at. And it came down to the 12th hour. We were in August, maybe even September, and we're having a conversation about a full ride scholarship, NCAA Division II, or trying to maybe get a scholarship at Coppin State. And we're having this conversation and I'm letting him know, like, Cita, you're writing the next part of your story. Is part two, and then he never plays college basketball again? Or is part two, and then he gains a degree, he gains an education, he provides for his daughter? What decision are we going to make? And having a conversation with Juan Dixon, I knew nothing about him. And nothing from him. And I had a great conversation with him just as a man and how he was going to take care of or not take care of Cita Conte and what was or what wasn't. And sure enough, Cita Conte was on, I think he was on campus for about 3 days, 4 days, and earned himself a scholarship. But he put himself in that position and then he had to bet on himself and make those decisions. But what we're able to do is kind of give some situations and stories, and then also let these people know these are real tangible people. We need to connect you with those people. And sometimes when we see some of our student athletes in some tough ruts, we're willing to extend them back to conversation with previous student athletes we've had and say, hey, call Jonathan Comegum, have this conversation. Call Jordan Kelly or have this conversation and kind of see where it goes and see what you learn from it. Down the line. And some of that for us is connecting some of those people, because I believe some of those people are going to be CEOs, CFOs, and are going to need to hire some of the guys. And I'm probably going to have a conversation of, hey, you know, will you take them? I think he needs one more chance, one more opportunity. But trying to get those guys to understand the stories and understand they're real, and then understand that they have the ability to write their own. And when you realize you have a lot more control of your life, you can have a lot more success in your life. And so we push that conversation, and it is sometimes very uncomfortable. We try to talk our way out of something or talk our way into something instead of acting the way we need to act to do what we said that we wanted to do. And we have to fight that, and we fight that constantly, but it's through communication, conversation, and then being able to grow as a group. And I think that becomes really important. We've got to be able to spend more time together. COVID did not allow that, trying to work through that. And then also moving, you know, when you're trying to get your house and your life in order outside of basketball. Some of those things, I think, didn't allow us to connect and grow as fast as we wanted to, relationally off the floor. But when you realize the guy next to you is not a monster, great things can happen. And when you realize the person across from you doesn't have bad intentions, great things can happen. And you've got to be able to own the selfish mistake and choice, and you got to be able to have that conversation. We can't say, no, coach, I don't get that read. Yes, coach, I made a dumb decision, and I did see him in the corner. Perfect. We can work with that. That's the truth. Let's have that conversation, and let's move forward, and let's not make that same choice again. And I think with our staff down, we have to have people that have open hearts and open minds, active listeners, and people that are excited to learn. And people that are excited to grow. So I think it does come down to how you build your team, and making sure that as you move, you're challenging and having conversations that are maybe not exactly what you want to hear, but they're honest. And I think if you start a relationship in truth, I think you can end in a really good spot.
Yeah. You said some really good stuff there, and you know, maybe worth going and rehashing and watching that part again. But yeah, I really like what you just shared with us, and I think it's extremely important. And, you know, that has to do with everything, not just JUCO, you know, like that transformational thinking. And hey, you are really in control of your own happiness. You are really in control of your own life. And we spend a lot of time worrying about things we can't control, blaming, complaining, making excuses, instead of actually, you know, taking action. And sometimes they don't know, or we don't know, what actions need to take place. Mm-hmm. But, you know, when you do know the difference between right or wrong, and you continue to pick the wrong thing, it's like, it's challenging, and you get mad and frustrated as a coach and as a leader, but you just got to keep plugging away at it. And you've done a really good job with that. As we wrap up, we probably got time for two more here. You know, is there any questions I should have asked that I haven't, or anything that you want to talk about, you know, in terms of the Rising Coaches community, or someone listening to this that they, you know, should hear? You feel like you have a unique, you know, story. You've told some really good stories like that are relevant to this podcast.
You know, I think grateful and thankful. You got to be grateful for what you have and what's in front of you, and thankful for that. It can be taken from you at any moment and at any point in time. Being in any part of a program, you're adding value, whether if you want to or not. And I think, as I look back, I was for more or less the fourth assistant at Williston State College when I first got into it on the men's side as a volunteer. And I was the second assistant, on the women's side, We had an individual, Josh Finder's Goose, who was the person that also had a full time job at the elementary or at the middle school and would coach. Well, he was more or less second in line there, and I had to hang my ego in all of those spaces about, well, I thought I was hired to be this, and I thought I was, so I should have the first conversation, and I had to hang my ego in that. And I also had to hang my ego in knowing I was the fourth guy in line to any conversation with our AD and men's basketball coach, which means I'm probably not going to be able to be that accessible to that or he's not going to be that accessible for me because he has a lot going on. And I had to then stop looking around and stop trying to find clear direction from my direct supervisors and start looking around kind of at the picture of everything and figure out what holes are there and how I could kind of take my own paintbrush and paint on it and then allow somebody else to come in and say, like, that needs red, not blue. We don't do blue around here. We need that. We need green, not yellow. And get bumped into place as opposed to wait around to be told what to do or to find something to do. I had my hand slapped a little bit more in me trying to do too much. And I think if I was to go back to it, some of those times were really embarrassing for me because I would get going and I would get really excited and I'd start flowing. All of a sudden we're in a halftime and I've got all these great ideas for an adjustment or things that we need to do or make. And I had to realize that, hey, you know, that's not your realm or not right now. And Eric did a great job of saying, hey, I got it. You know, let's calm down over here a little bit. And if you want to talk about it, you know, write it down or we'll, you know, let's talk about it later. And I think finding what you can do and how you can make a great impact is more important than whatever you're listed as or at. In whatever position, there is more likely than not, there's enough to do to keep busy and to bring impact and to bring value. And you can fill a hole that maybe we might need, not even known there was a hole there, but we can fill holes and find things to do. And that's what for me slid me down in junior college where all of a sudden I'm coaching the softball team. And maintaining and retaining that group in a dismal place. That experience allowed me to figure out how to work through us losing our team here at Seward County this last year. I was able to lean on softball head coaching experience where I had to take over something that was busted, broken, shattered. And I had to pull student athletes back in to say, we're going to have a great time and we're going to learn, we're going to grow, we're going to have some fun. And I had to change how I was going to communicate with them and what expectations we were communicating as opposed to how we were moving with our men's basketball team a week or two prior. And we had just come off a national tournament and we had just been to Hutch at 28 and I'm flipping caps and literally putting on a ball cap, sitting on a bucket while I'm watching my peers go to the Final Four, my peers go to recruit. And I had to stop, take a breath and say, hey, this is what I get to do. And this is something that I can bring value and impact to my community and to my college. And once I stopped and took a breath, it allowed me to really find myself and find joy in my day. But in this profession, there is nothing easy. There is nothing given to you. There's a lot of heartache. You're in the business of being let down. But I think the first thing you need to do is not let yourself down by trying to put yourself in a box. We have that conversation with our student athletes every day. Let's take the chains off ourselves. So I think when it comes to trying to make the most of your situation, I think if you're trying to find holes and you're trying to fill those, and even if you see a new concept, maybe in different institutions doing something with their graphics and you really like that and we don't have time to do it here at Seward County. Okay, well, this person does. And this person found it and did it. And now all of a sudden it's what we do at Seward County. So I do think enjoy it. And I do think there was definitely times in my life where I was trying to figure out why I wasn't the top assistant or those things. And I had to make that adjustment very quickly or else I was in a lot of ways going to be out of the profession. And you're very close. You never know how close you are. You never know how close you are to being in it. And you never know how close you are to being out of it. And so you've got to just put your head down and keep going and find joy in your day.
Yeah, it's special. It's all about perspective. You know, it's all about how you perceive what it is and what you not persuade, but you kind of lead yourself to believe. Like that stuff matters. The attitude and your approach towards it is, hey, if it's not something you want, what is this trying to teach me? Take a step back, give yourself that time, space, opportunity to react to it and, you know, continue to move forward with, hey, realizing, hey, yeah, you know, this Owlies isn't the best business, but it is a great profession. And if I can continue to build on that impact, I think it's just that special. And that's who you are. And that's what you've done. And it's what we're going to continue to do. And, You're only 31, so you got another, 30 years in you, man. So,
man. Yeah, well, I'll say this much.
Yeah, go ahead.
My father is a lifelong youth basketball coach. He loves what he does. This year he coached three teams, and he's been saying this was his last one for a very long time. He's always made a commitment to coach in the community he's in. He grew up St. Paul, Minnesota, was then in St. Paul and coaching there. We moved out and we went to high school in the suburbs. He's coaching in that suburb. Then he moved again. He's coaching right where he is. And then he moved again. He's coaching right where he is. It's unique when you find something that you love and you know you don't ever need to grab the next thing because of your level of joy that you find in your day to day. He had some options, opportunities to coach ninth grade high school ball. And he says, "Hey, Riley, I'm the guy that does seventh and eighth grade, and I love it. And I love being that guy." And he loves, you know, being able to impact people at that age and that age bracket. I can't step on that floor and help him one lick. I can't figure out how this is moving and how it's shaking, but his level of joy in his day to day there keeps him coming back, and he keeps adding to buckets of young people. But it's something that he loves to do. And like I said, I look at that and I think that's inspiration for me. And at 31, if I can move and be, you know, 61 and have the same smile and vigor and enthusiasm that he does and what he's doing, and how he's impacting basketball and giving back to young people, then I'm gonna be really excited, and I'm gonna know I lived a fulfilled life.
Yep. Couldn't have said it better myself, man. So I appreciate you sharing your words and being on the podcast, and you know, some really good stuff there. And you know, if people want to get a hold of you or learn more about you, how can we find you?
Probably Twitter is probably best. I don't even know what I've got on there. I do a terrible job of posting on there, but I'll check it periodically. At Coach Hernandez _. That's probably the best way to get a hold of me. Otherwise, my email, riley.hernandez@scc.edu.
There you go. Mouthful right there. So
absolutely.
Awesome. Well, thanks for sharing, and look forward to seeing you soon, maybe at the Final Four here coming up.
Absolutely.
All right. See you at the JUCO Social.
Yes. Thank you, Coach Bender.
There you go. See you.